Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Going to give you my NFL picks for this week coming up in just a minute. But I did want to touch on one thing, which is the New England Patriots whole little scandal deal from this week. Sunday, Jay Glazer shows this tape on the Fox NFL show of what was apparently being sold as footage for a documentary web series on the Patriots called Do Your Job Following an Advanced Scout. And when the news was initially broken about the Patriots and the Bengals having a little bit of an issue with filming on the sideline, of course, your first reaction is not the Patriots again. But then they give their reason and you go, oh, that makes sense. All right, I buy that. Until you find out that that had been an alibi, a cover story that they had given in the past, right? Like when you go back to Spygate and other acts that the Patriots have been accused of perpetrating, one of the things that the filmers were told was to say you were doing it for a team show. So that was a cover story that was given in the past. So I see that and I go, all right, what's going on here? And the footage is shown, and the footage seems to be totally fixated on the Bengals sideline and what's going on over there, whether it's substitution patterns or coaches' signals or whatnot. I don't know. I don't know what the goal was, but it does not look like just generic B-roll for some web series, as they were saying. And then you hear the audio recording on the tape, and it sort of screams consciousness of guilt. You know, in court, there's something called consciousness of guilt when one's actions would belie to you that they are aware what they're doing is not right. And to me, that was the sound of the guy on the tape. He's like, yeah, we could just delete it. Forget about the whole thing. There's no other copies. We could just delete it. All right, if you just needed to delete it, then you knew something was not cool about what it was, right? You wouldn't need to delete it if it was fine. You just say, my bad, I didn't know that was against the rules. Or, you know, let's talk about how we want to handle this. No, I'll delete it. So what the NFL does here to me is very interesting. Obviously, this should all be subject to an investigation. I would never call for anything of import to not be subject to an investigation, right? And the truth of the matter, you hope it's an unbiased investigation. You hope it's a thorough investigation and all those things. And then the results be what they are. But if it is found that there was some sort of chicanery with the Patriots here, how do they handle it? Because that would be the third time publicly. So if it's the third time, imagine how many times there are that aren't documented. There's a Spygate, a Deflategate, and whatever you call this. And if it were any other team, it wouldn't be a big deal. Anybody who says that is correct. It wouldn't be a big deal. But the reason it is a big deal is because it is the team that's done it before. And they've burned all benefit of the doubt. All benefit of the doubt has to be gone. And you see a tape like that and you go, all right, well, why would they even be doing this? Why would they be filming the Bengals? Two things. One, if they didn't think it gave them a some sort of perceived advantage, they wouldn't do it in the first place, right? You know, that's what I said about Deflategate. Who cares? No big deal. It's not a big deal. I don't know if it's a big deal or not, but they wouldn't do it if they didn't think it gave them some sort of advantage. Then why go through the trouble to do it? Why have people slink off into the bathroom to take air out of the footballs if you didn't get an advantage, at least from your point of view? Same thing here. And then, if they're doing it to the Bengals, that would be an even better argument that they're just doing it all the time whenever they have a chance to. What I find, I guess, most interesting about this is nobody seems to care. Does nobody care because they're just used to it with the Patriots and we just kind of all right, yeah, they're kind of cheaters, and that's how we think of them? Or is it because the transgression seems so small? Or is it because people believe the cover story? See, I don't believe the cover story because, again, that was what they were giving as a cover, like an actual cover story in the past. But it just seems like nobody cares this time around. When to me, there has to be some sort of a blowback to this being the third time with the greatest dynasty in history, because you'll never catch me saying that the Patriots aren't the greatest, or that Tom Brady isn't the greatest, or Belichick isn't the greatest, or what they've achieved isn't the greatest, because it is. At the same time, I think it is fair to call them cheaters. My jokes, and you know, I guess I make light of my jokes are that I wouldn't let Bill Belichick run the bank in Monopoly, or that the Patriots, if they were a pro wrestler, would put their feet on the ropes to secure the pin, or distract the ref and hit you with a chair. Something along those lines. But you would think any hint of another Patriots cheating scandal would be a monstrous story, and it just doesn't feel like this one is. So maybe the NFL will use that as a cue to not do too much this time around. When by track record, I would think even if this was a minor infraction on its own, it would justify an extremely harsh action from the NFL, including draft pick removal near the, you know, the number one draft pick, including suspension of Bill Belichick, stuff like that. Why do you think this latest Patriots scandal hasn't been, you know, the leading story right now in the NFL? Why do you think it's sort of been quiet and not resonated as much? 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. That's CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, brought to you by GEICO. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Anthony, why do you think it is that way? Why do you think this one is sort of... Or I think he's already getting to the calls you guys are calling in.
I got you. Yeah, and I mean, it is mind-boggling because, I mean, it's kind of like frustrating at this point. Yeah. It's like, how many times we have to go through with these guys before they're going to, like, learn their lesson? Like, and I agree. Like, if it comes down that, yeah, I mean, they were doing something that they should, and they purposely, and they knew about it. I mean, Belichick, I think, definitely needs to be suspended at least, you know, a game.
Yeah, if not more. I mean, really, you should be completely harsh. Yeah, I mean, you should kick him out for a season or something like that. It's really what you probably should do at this point. It's wild. And again, I don't know what happened here. Of course, it all would pend an investigation of some sorts. But I will say this. I don't believe them. Why would I believe them? What have they given me to give them the benefit of the doubt? I remember after they showed the tape on Sunday, so many of them were like, well, I can't imagine that Bill Belichick and the Patriots. What do you mean you can't imagine that they would do it? They've done it before. A bunch of times. And then you have all the stories about people, you know, making sure their playbooks aren't out in New England, or their radio signals going out in New England. I mean, it's kind of their thing. James in South Carolina. James, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, James?
Hey, yeah, I wanted to chime in on both the greatest of all time conversation and the why nobody cares about the Patriots scandal. I think one thing that's not considered enough in the greatest of all time conversation is that Tom Brady never pushed for a market contract. His contracts have generally been very team friendly, and looking at the league, teams that are winning the Super Bowl are doing it with quarterbacks on team-friendly contracts. And so he's given up an opportunity to make more money to be able to win more games. And so I think that understanding that it's a team game and that it's about the championship, I think that's one big part of it. On the cheating scandal, I think nobody cares because they just keep winning. It keeps happening, and they keep winning. And
yeah, so but shouldn't that – isn't that counterintuitive? Because if you're, you know, like, if you're cheating and you're losing, it's like, all right, you're an idiot. And when you're cheating and you're winning, that should be what you're upset about. Hey, maybe it's factoring in. Even if it's a small, because I think that's what we really think. It's like a small thing, right? That's what we all think, right? I think it's a small thing. How much advantage could they really be gaining? But They wouldn't be doing it if they didn't think it was some, right? Like, they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't think it helped them. Otherwise, why? T-Money in Tucson, Arizona. T-Money, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, man? Hey, I just want to give a shout-out to Bill Belichick. He is a champion at cheating, and you can't keep a good man down. You catch him one time, he's going to do it another way. And I think in about 5 to 10 years from now, someone's going to come out from the organization with a tell-all book, and everybody's going to be like, oh, we're so surprised. Everybody knew this was happening, man. And it's not counterintuitive that they're winning and cheating at the same time. That's why you cheat.
No. It's counterintuitive. My point was, it's counterintuitive. The caller said nobody cares because they're winning. That's counterintuitive because
yeah.
You would think you'd be upset thinking maybe the cheating is helping them win.
What I want to know is, why isn't Congress, like, investigating these guys? I mean,
well, you know, maybe it's not a coincidence that, you know, the Kraft is close with Trump or whatnot and all that. These guys hang out with him. You just do the stuff out in the open and nobody cares. I don't know. I guess that's the way it works.
No, I mean, I hold this personal. I'm a 49er fan, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of things that go cross-grain against this. Brady's the GOAT, Belichick. I mean, everybody's trying to forget Walsh and Montana. Give me a break. These guys never cheated once. The 49ers never cheated. The Patriots, was this like the sixth time? I think the Patriots have gotten caught cheating more times than the freaking Dallas Cowboys.
Well, the NFL destroyed the Spygate tapes. I mean, like, to me, I never get over that. I was like, what? Like, if you tell somebody that and expect them to take that at face value. Oh, no, we thought the best thing was to destroy the evidence. Really? That was the best thing to prove that there was no big deal. Just destroy the evidence. And Tom Brady destroyed his phone when they got it for Deflategate. And now they just, oh, yeah, this was just for some team show. Sure. You know, like, how many times? You know, here's the thing. I believe you could be both great and a cheater, right? Like, you could be great. Obviously, they're great. There's no amount of cheating that's going to win the games for them. You have to go out there and execute. But they're clearly doing things to give themselves an edge, and you have to be a little uncomfortable with that, I would think, given that they're the best dynasty in the history of the league. But what do I know? Robin Lundberg Show, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
It's the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. You know, KG had his little comments this week. I don't know if you guys saw those, saying that the Celtics broke LeBron, forced him to go to Miami. Well, I actually don't disagree with Garnett that the Celtics were a prime reason he went to Miami. I mean, I think that's actually correct. The Cavs struggled in the postseason after LeBron led them all those regular season wins, and they were going head-to-head with the Celtics. Here's the thing, though. The Celtics had Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, and Rajon Rondo. And LeBron had Boobie Gibson. What I took umbrage with was KG saying that he broke LeBron. Because LeBron don't look broke. LeBron looks just fine to me, and he's still playing while KG's playing alongside Adam Sandler. You know, that's part of the difference there. And so the word broke, that is just incorrect, because LeBron also broke the Celtics when he went to Miami and he teamed up with Bosch and Wade and evened up the odds there, evened up the teams, evened up the squads. The Heat beat the Celtics, including LeBron's famous Game 6 where he went crazy in Boston, that legacy-defining game, and got them out of there. It was so bad, Ray Allen eventually went to Miami and left Boston. So KG saying that his team was the biggest reason LeBron went to Miami, I wouldn't have had an issue with. Saying they broke him, I have an issue with, because we're talking about damn near 10 years later and LeBron's still going. And right after that, he clearly wasn't broken because he started beating them once he had players on his team. I think that Celtics team sneakily sort of started the era of the big threes there that went on. KG, Pierce, and Garnett. You throw in Rondo, it was a really good team. But yeah, I mean, for a squad that won one championship, they sometimes get a little bit too big for their britches. And I'm a fan of KG. in his game. I mean, he's an all-time great player for sure. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. All right, time to give you my NFL picks for this week. Let's do it. So last week was a good example why you shouldn't bet the NFL. The NFL is what they spend most of their time on because it's where most of the money comes from. So they get it really right, really good. And there were several games last week that I think I had in the bag that I wound up losing by a point or a half a point because of weird end results or backdoor covers and stuff like that. So overall, I was 3-4-1. Anthony, is that correct last week?
3-4-1, 42-49 and 2 overall now.
So 7 games under 500. My quest was to get back to 500. I really, if you haven't followed the show, I started the year very poorly. Like my first two weeks were in the toilet, and I was very concerned I was going to embarrass myself coming off of a season last year where I was close to 10 games over 500. But I've been about 500 since then and then had a 4-1 week, so I was hoping to replicate it, and I thought I might have last week. I picked 8 games to try and get to 500, and I there was a point there I thought I might go like 6-2, but those Washington, the Philly game, that cost me, a couple other games cost me, but that doesn't stop my quest. My quest will continue, and it will begin with the Cowboys -2 over the Eagles. I just think Dallas is a better team than Philadelphia. I know they're in the same position, but the Eagles are so banged up. And you just look at the body of work and their recent games. Philadelphia's struggling against these lesser teams. While Dallas has lost some games, but they've lost them to good teams. And last week, they really got it rolling in a fairly convincing performance. Overall, they're plus 90 on the season. They beat the Eagles head-to-head. So I'm just going to go with the better team, at least in my mind, in a game of that significance. Next up, the Buccaneers plus 3 over the Texans. I've been riding Tampa for a while now. Tampa's sort of sneaky good. They lost a bunch of close games early in the year where they had them, and then they screwed up, or Winston threw an interception or something like that, because at one point in the season they were 2-6. Well, they're 7-7 now. What does that mean? That means they've gone 5-1 since that point in time, including the last 4 in a row. So I'm just going to ride that trend for a while. At home, getting 3 points, I like that, being home dogs. Give me the Buccaneers plus 3 over the Texans. I'll take the Ravens -10 over the Browns. There's no reason not to ride the Ravens train. I know this is a divisional thing, and the Browns actually got the best of them earlier this year, but the Ravens are just on another level right now, and it just feels like things are falling apart in Cleveland. There's not much for Baltimore to play for, but considering the fact that they could want that revenge, in a sense, they don't want to lose to the Browns twice. They want to go, all right, guys, we'll show you what the real deal is here. I'll take Baltimore -10 over Cleveland. Give me the Cardinals plus 9.5 over the Seahawks. I like the Seahawks. I love Russell Wilson, but they're not a blowout kind of team. That's just not their style of game. I mean, they've had a few here and there, of course. But if you look at the season, most of their wins are close. I mean, look, 21-20, 28-26, 27-10. That happened to be against the Cardinals, by the way. 30-29, 32-28, 27-20, 40-34, 27-24, 17-9, 37-30, and 30-24. Almost all of their games are within a touchdown. In fact, I think that game I just said against the Cardinals the first time was the only time they won by double digits on the entire season. Kingsbury and Kyler Murray, I've been fairly impressed with, but more of this is just a case of 9.5 being too many points. I like the Cardinals to beat that spread. I'll take the Steelers -3 over the Jets. You know, the Jets are in, I don't know where you would describe their current situation. While the Steelers are in the mix of a playoff hunt, they've got a fairly dominant defense at this point in the season. So give me the proven team that's playing for the postseason. Steelers -3 over the Jets. I'll take the Dolphins +1 over the Bengals. I just think the Dolphins are better than Cincinnati. That's not saying much. That's not, you know, effusive praise for Miami, who came into the season looking like a team that was playing for the number one pick, but they don't look like a team that's playing for the number one pick right now. They're still going to finish near the top of the draft. They're still very, very bad, but they've been much more competitive over the second half of the season. So give me the Dolphins plus one over the Bengals. And finally, I'll take the Chiefs minus six over the Bears. I struggled with this because the Bears have been playing really well, but I think Kansas City's sort of a sleeping giant. Remember, they came into the season with all the hype, but because Patrick Mahomes got hurt and Lamar Jackson's been so good, Baltimore has taken that mantle, and the Chiefs have been going about their business quietly. But I kind of believe they're getting their legs back under them. They're getting their rhythm back, and they're a team that could win the Super Bowl as good as anybody. So, like, you look at the AFC, and I think it's the Ravens and the Chiefs with a hat tip to the Patriots, who I'll always keep in the mix due to their track record and their history. But the two dominant teams to me look like they could be Kansas City and Baltimore. So I look for KC to continue to keep that going and win comfortably over the Chicago Bears. So to sum that up, that's Cowboys minus two over the Eagles, Buccaneers plus three over the Texans, Ravens minus 10 over the Browns, Cardinals plus 9.5 over the Seahawks, Steelers minus three over the Jets, Dolphins plus one over the Bengals, and Chiefs minus six over the Bears.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
It is the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio. I guess a little bit of quasi-breaking news. According to Ian Rappaport, the Buccaneers slated to bring back Jameis Winston for the 2020 season. We're all better for that, right? Jameis Winston's a very entertaining player. He's either throwing the ball for a 60-yard touchdown or an interception. No in between, right? I've never seen him complete a screen pass. Anthony, have you ever seen Jameis Winston complete a screen pass?
Not while I've been watching.
No, it's either a bomb or an interception. No in between. Very interesting guy to watch. But like I said before, the Buccaneers have actually been quietly better than I think people realize. If they didn't start the season the way they did in the hole, losing a game at New Orleans 31-24, losing at Tennessee 27-23, losing at Seattle 40-34 in OT, we'd be talking about them in the playoff mix right now. Instead, that's likely, you know, not the case. But Jameis Winston has played well enough down the stretch to at least be back with the team for one more season. 855-212-4227 at Robin Lundberg is the Twitter handle. Time now to get to every topic I have not as of yet in another one. Anthony, what's up first?
All right, we'll start with some NBA. So Magic Johnson had some comments on the Lakers' early season success, and he said, quote, "This team would not be in the position it's in without me." So do you see Magic's signature on their success, and do you have a problem with him claiming credit?
I don't care about claiming credit. Who cares? Do I see a signature? No. Unless, I mean, look, here's the real deal of it. Did LeBron James sign there because of Magic Johnson? How much of an influence did Magic Johnson have? Or did LeBron just want to be in L.A. and the Lakers are the prestige franchise and it didn't matter? Because if he had some sway on LeBron, then yeah. Because everything has happened because of LeBron, right? Anthony Davis isn't with the Lakers if not for LeBron. The Lakers are not contenders if not for LeBron. So that's really the central question there. How much influence did Magic Johnson have on LeBron when he made his decision?
So sticking with the NBA, the Bucks beat the Lakers on Thursday night, and Giannis downplayed the victory, saying it wasn't a special game. Do you think it was a statement victory for Milwaukee?
Again, this is why I was talking about the midseason NBA tournament the way I was. That game should feel more important than it does. No, I don't think it's a – I think it's a relatively meaningless victory. It was a statement victory in the sense of they went up big on the Lakers, and coming away, you could say, hey, the Bucks are the best team in the league right now when it comes to the regular season. But you still have questions about Milwaukee in the postseason. And those questions are, you know, Mike Budenholzer's teams have been very good in the regular season throughout his coaching career. Not as good in the playoffs. Giannis is a monster, an unbelievable player. But there are still doubts about his ability to create his own shot, shoot from the outside come playoff time. He's improved. I mean, he's shooting the three ball better. That was the best I've ever seen him shoot from the outside against the Lakers. So, in a sense, it was a statement game because it might have been a, happy learned how to putt moment for Giannis there. But overall, No, we're going to have to see it in the playoffs for it to actually matter. And that's why I think the midseason tournament idea is not a bad one, because you could attach some meaning to some of these games that are otherwise meaningless. It was a fun game to watch. I'm glad it happened. I would watch it again if it came on. But I don't have any real takeaways other than we knew Milwaukee was an excellent regular season team. And I think if you're looking at the Lakers, they could use another ball-handling creator at some point, so LeBron doesn't have to do all of that. But I'd still pick L.A. in a playoff series over the Bucks.
Zion Williamson is not going to hit the original 6 to 8 week timeline for his knee injury to return. David Griffin said Zion is fully weight-bearing on his knee, but he said he's still a ways away from his season debut. Should the Pelicans just rest Williamson for the entire season?
If there's something else wrong, yes. If there is a contributing factor as to why this is happening, something is wrong with his gait, the way he walks, the way he's jumping and landing. There is concern about a re-aggravation and injury. You think you have to streamline his body, you know, like break it down and rebuild it back up? Then yes, absolutely. If not, then no. You know, if this was if you diagnosed this as an individual injury, an isolated injury that happened and could have happened to anybody, and he's fully recovered, then why are we holding him out? Just to be extra super? All that complaining about load management, and then we're not going to play a rookie who's healthy to play? Come on, that's crazy talk. But if there's something else going on, which I'm concerned at this point there is, you know, he's had a few injuries now, and, you know, as freak of an athlete as he is, you would think he would beat the timeline, right? Like the guys who are like that tend to heal up fast. That's where my concern would be. If they maybe are, you know, doing their testing and saying, we have to change the way this guy's absorbing contact when it comes to running and jumping and all that, the buildup of the impact. We have to change that. We have to change his body type. We have to, you know, slim him down up top, that sort of stuff. Then, okay, then I can buy it. But if he's healthy and he's just taking a few more weeks to be ready, then you should play him when he's ready.
College hoops: James Wiseman withdraws from Memphis, begins preparing for the NBA draft. We can't blame him for bolting, right, Robin?
Oh, of course not. I mean, this is the NCAA's fault. It almost seemed inevitable once all this went down. I guess we thought maybe he would come back after that suspension. But the part of this that really irritates me is that the order that he had to pay $11,500 to charity, that's outrageous that they would try to pull that. I mean, I get it. Let me be clear. No one's mad about the idea of a charity receiving money. Of course not. But don't confuse it. That's, you know, not the point. In fact, I think they're hiding behind that they could say a charity. The point is essentially fining somebody who's not getting paid, not getting a dime. You're going to fine them? Where's he going to get that $11,500 from? Why do you think his family took the money in the first place to help move, you know, from Penny Hardaway? Because not exactly like they're swimming in dough. So $11,000 is a lot for somebody in that position. For, you know, for me, you told me I was fine. I had to pay $11,000 to chair. Okay, how? Right now? You know, like, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And it didn't have to be this way. I mean, there's a way to deal with that. I don't think this is the problem they're facing. I don't think anybody thought what happened with Wiseman was some terrible thing, first of all. So it could have gone unpenalized. But if there's some rule that you had to enforce, if you wanted to just suspend him a game or two, okay, and then figure out how to fix your rules and whatnot. But it's just more of making the NCAA look bad, really. They don't want these kids to have a penny, pun intended. And eventually, you're going to start seeing other avenues taken. I mean, we already are seeing it a little bit, guys going to play internationally. But what if the G League becomes a more viable option? Because you got a lot of guys who are prospects and are only waiting and biding time until they're age eligible to go to the NBA that might start seeing a different path than the NCAA. And I feel bad for Wiseman because he's also robbed of an experience here. Right? He's a young kid. He only has this one chance to go live the college lifestyle. He was going to do it for 1 year, have some fun, play some basketball, and then start his professional life. And now he can't do that. Because of what? Because of what? Is there anybody that actually has a problem that when he was in high school, you know, somebody helped him out? It's a wild story, really.
NFL, the Detroit Lions will bring back Matt Patricia and GM Bob Quinn for the 2020 season. If you were running things, Robin, in Detroit, would you bring back Patricia for a third season?
I don't think so. I really haven't seen anything from them, and that has to go back to the GM spot as well. I mean, I think it's probably time for a fresh start for both in that position, but you look at the Detroit Lions, and they haven't exactly been the most well-run organization over the years. They had some things go against them this season. Obviously, Matt Stafford was banged up and the like, but is there anything about the Detroit Lions right now that tells you mediocre isn't the best case scenario for them? And you know, mediocrity is not the best place to be in sports nowadays. I just would call what's gone on with the tenure of that management, both upper management at the GM spot and middle management at the coaching spot, as uninspiring. And that's a team that's dropped a lot of games in a row now. After being 3-3-1 to start the season, they're 3-10-1. Things just headed south. The excuse of the quarterback is there and is valid, but I just don't see anything that looks like they're building towards something. So to me, I would start building over.
We're talking about all-time great quarterbacks earlier in the show, and last night Terrell Owens was trending on Twitter because he did not make the NFL 100 all-time top 10 wide receiver list, and people were very upset. So what do you think, Robin? Terrell Owens, not a top 10 on the NFL all-time top 10 list wide receiver. Do you have a problem with that?
Yeah, he's top three to me. Top three to me, Jerry Rice, Terrell Owens, Randy Moss. Jerry Rice, Randy Moss, Terrell Owens. I mean, I always think Randy Moss and Terrell Owens is a good argument because Randy Moss was better at tracking down the deep ball than anybody I've ever seen in a bigger over-the-top weapon. But Terrell Owens could catch a deep and also would catch you underneath. And of course, he comes with some baggage, and that's a legitimate concern. And it is a reason why some people may not have the highest opinion of him as a member of a team. And that I actually do understand. I think people just take it too far because as an individual, that guy was absolutely dominant at the wide receiver spot. And not only is he top 10 all time to me, he's top three all time as far as the best wide receivers that I've ever seen.
All right, and finally, we have Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. I know you haven't seen it yet, and our good friend over here hasn't seen it either, but I want to ask you your favorite new character of the trilogy.
Oh, that's interesting.
You and Sean haven't seen the new ones. So
yeah,
I can't get into specifics.
I think I go with the main characters. I liked the Force Awakens. I know that was a controversial one, because it was basically a remake of the original. I kind of liked it. I saw it as an homage, I guess, to the original. I was not a fan of the most recent one, the Last Jedi. Just felt like the tone kept changing in that movie. But as far as the characters, I still think it's been at its strongest and most defined when it's Rey and Kylo Ren. So I would say it's those two characters. And in the past, Star Wars has really excelled with the side characters, you know, both the ones that gain a bunch of notoriety, but despite no screen time and crying like a baby when they die, like Boba Fett or Chewbacca, you know, who's a lovable guy, or Han Solo, who was obviously a main character, but the sub-main character, Princess Leia, same thing. And this one, I think it's actually been the main characters because that's where they've figured out a more defined story and a narrative. I think the biggest problem I had with the first two movies together, and again, I haven't seen the third, so I'm not going to give an opinion on something I haven't seen, I'm not so sure they went in with the complete vision. You know why the Marvel thing was so successful? Because they had a vision from beginning to end. This is what we're starting with. This is what we're building. This is how we're culminating. I don't know if they had that with Star Wars, but I do think they brought a certain level of gravitas to the main characters. So I actually think it's the main characters in this case. Do you agree?
Characters
or no?
Were great. The main characters were great. My favorite's been Ben Solo, but out of the main, you know, that whole relationship with Rey and and Pope and Finn. I love that dynamic with those three. I think that's been one of the strengths of the new trilogy is those characters and that relationship amongst those three. It's been a lot of fun to watch. It stinks just because I feel like they're so new to us and now they're gone because this is the end of the Skywalker saga. So that's the end of these movies. And so now we just got introduced to these characters in 2015 with The Force Awakens and now we're done with them.
You seem upset about this. That was a lot coming out. The Force was strong in you. Your frustration force was very strong. Did they use the Force to FaceTime in this one like they did in the last one? FaceTiming in the last... Weren't they FaceTiming? Weren't... like, boop, 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 boop. Oh, I got a Force message. Hey, it's Kylo Ren. What's up, Kylo? Are you on the dark side or not? I got to know. You got to give me, are you going to wind up on the dark side or not? All right, I'll be back same time, same place next week. Have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, whatever you're celebrating. Enjoy it, and I'll talk to you in a week. It's been the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.